ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 63 एंटाइटल्ड लॉर्ड कृष्णा फाइट्स बानासुर। दिस इज टेक्स्ट नंबर 38। त्वमेक आद्य पुरुषो द्वितीय तुर्या स्वदृग् देतुरहेतुरीश प्रतीयसेथापि यता विकारम् स्वमायया सर्वगुणा प्रसीद्ये त्वमेक आद्य पुरुषो द्वितीय तुर्या स्वदृग् देतुरहेतुरीश प्रतीयसेथापि यता विकारम् स्वमायया सर्वगुणा प्रसीद्ये त्वमेक आद्य पुरुषो द्वितीय तुर्या स्वदृग् देतुरहेतुरीश प्रतीयसेथापि यता विकारम् स्वमायया सर्वगुणा प्रसीद्ये जी। त्वमेक आद्य पुरुषो द्वितीय स्वमाया सर्वगुण प्रसीदे त्वं यू एकः वन आद्य ओरिजिनल पुरुषः सुप्रीम पर्सन अद्वितीय विदाउट अ सेकेंड तुर्यः ट्रांसेंडेंटल स्वदृक् सेल्फ मैनिफेस्टिंग हेतु द कॉज Ahetuhu, having no cause. Isha, the supreme controller. Pratiyase, you are perceived. Athapi, nonetheless. Yata, according to. Vikaram, various transformations. Swa, by your own. Mayaya, illusory potency. Sarva, of all. Guna, material qualities. Prasiddhaye, for the complete manifestation. Translation. You are the original person, one without a second, transcendental and self-manifesting. Uncaused, you are the cause of all, and you are the ultimate controller. You are nonetheless perceived in terms of the transformations of matter affected by your illusory energy. Transformations you sanction so that the various material qualities can fully manifest. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Acharya's comment as follows on this verse. Sridhar Swami explains that the term Adya Purusha, the original Purusha, indicates that Lord Krishna expands Himself as Mahavishnu, the first of the three Purushas, who takes charge of the cosmic manifestation. The Lord is Eka Advitiya, one without a second, because there is no one equal to the Lord or different from Him. No one is completely equal to the Supreme Godhead, and yet because all the living beings are expansions of the potency of Godhead, no one is qualitatively different from Him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu nicely explains this inconceivable situation by stating that the absolute truth and the living beings are qualitatively one but quantitatively different. The absolute possesses infinite spiritual consciousness, whereas the living beings possess infinitesimal consciousness, which is subject to being covered by illusion. Srila Jiva Goswami commenting on the term Adya Purusha, quotes from Satvata Tantra, Vishnustu Trini Rupani. There are three forms of Vishnu for the cosmic manifestation, etc. Srila Jiva Goswami also quotes a statement of the Lord's from Shruti. Purvam evaham yasan. In the beginning, I alone existed in the world. This statement describes the form of the Lord called as Purushavatar, who exists before the cosmic manifestation. Srila Jiva Goswami also quotes the following Shruti mantra, Tad Purushasya Purushatvam, which means such constitutes the Lord's status as Purusha. Actually, Lord Krishna is the essence of the Purusha incarnation because He is Turiya, as described in the present verse. Jiva Goswami explains the term Turiya, literally the fourth, by quoting Sridhar Swami's commentary to the Bhagavatam verse 11.15.16. Virata Hiranyagarbhascha Karanam Cheti Upadhyaya Ishasya Yat Tribirhinam Turiyam Tad Vidur Buddha. The Lord's universal form, His Hiranyagarbha form, and the primeval causal manifestation of material nature are all relative conceptions. But because the Lord Himself is not covered by these three, intelligent authorities call Him the fourth. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti, the word Turiya indicates that the Lord is the fourth member of the quadruple expansion of Godhead called Chaturvyuha. In other words, Lord Krishna is Vasudev. Lord Krishna is Swadrik, that is, He alone can perceive Himself perfectly because He is infinite spiritual existence, infinitely pure. He is Hetu, the cause of everything, and yet He is Ahetu, without a cause. Therefore, He is Isha, the supreme controller. The last two lines of this verse are of special philosophical significance. Why is the Lord perceived differently by different persons, although He is one? A partial explanation is given here. By the agency of Maya, the Lord's external potency, material nature is in a constant state of transformation, vikar. In one sense, then, material nature is unreal, asat. But because God is the supreme reality and because He is present within all things and all things are His potency, material objects or energies possess a degree of reality. Therefore, some people see one aspect of material energy and think, this is reality,
While other people see different aspect of material energy and think, no, that is reality. Being conditioned souls, we are covered by different configurations of material nature, and thus we describe the supreme truth as or the supreme Lord in terms of our own corrupted vision. Yet even the covering qualities of material nature, such as our conditioned intelligence, mind and senses, are real, being the potency of the supreme Lord. And therefore, through all things we can perceive in a more or less subjective way, the supreme personality of Godhead. That is why the present verse states, Prati yase, you are perceived. Furthermore, without the manifestation of material nature's covering qualities, the creation could not fulfill its purpose, namely, to allow the conditioned souls to make their best attempt to enjoy without God, so that they will finally understand the futility of such an illusory notion. Hare Krishna. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsya Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patyanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So in this particular section that we are reading, it's a very esoteric section of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the sense that it's a fight between two great personalities. Whenever two great personalities fight, it's definitely something that regular people can't understand. Of course, I have no qualification in speaking on these subject matters, but to somehow try to bring some relevance to our lives, we should try our best to understand with our limited capacity and abilities. So I seek the blessings of all the devotees so that I can speak something. So this particular section of the Srimad Bhagavatam brings some very beautiful understandings about relationships between guru and disciple. Banasur is a disciple of Lord Shiva. He is a worshipper of Lord Shiva. And how he deals with Lord Shiva and how he treats Lord Shiva and how Shiva treats him, it shows a lot of dynamics between guru and disciple actually. And of course, there are many other things that we can understand from this whole story. The most amazing thing we can understand from this whole story, which I will conclude with, is the fact that when two great personalities fight, even in that, you know, in that apparent fight between two great personalities, it ends with very respectful dealings. We are finding that Shiva and Lord Krishna have been fighting like anything, you know. But the way this fight is ending in a such a respectful tone, you know. Both of them are actually respecting each other, both of them are really appreciating each other. And that's something that I found very unique to the Vedic culture. Fighting is not a problem. But after the fight, how you end it, that shows your maturity. That shows your, you know, the type of, you know, stability that you have. So, I would like to just kind of summarize the entire pastime of Banasura. And within the entire pastime, there are some very beautiful lessons that come out pertaining to the relationship between guru and disciple, between Banasura and Lord Shiva, which can make a difference to our personal lives. So the story of Banasura, it begins with the description of Bana being the eldest son of Bali Maharaj. So he lived in his capital, Sonitapura, and he was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. And it is explained, the story begins by telling that because Banasura was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, all the great demigods favored him and they were waiting upon him practically. And his whole city, the whole, you know, the capital of Banasura city was opulent because of the very fact that Lord Shiva personally graced him or gave him his benedictions. So if you find Banasura's life is a product of mercy from both sides, Krishna's side and Shiva's side. Banasura was the son of Bali Maharaj. And, you know, naturally being connected to Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, the whole dynasty, Banasura had a special benediction from Krishna. Which means he was assured that Krishna will not kill him. He was assured that Krishna will protect him because he came from the dynasty. In addition to that, Lord Shiva also gave him benediction and Lord Shiva also gave him his mercy. Many times, when too much mercy flows, one tends to misunderstand that he tends to misunderstand mercy to be his greatness. So, human beings, however great they may be, they are byproducts of somebody's grace. They are byproducts of God's grace and the grace of great devotees on their life. If you study the history of mankind, most people who have been successful in life, they've had somebody who has been blessing them, giving them, you know, a lot of mercy. Or the Lord's mercy is flowing through their family in some way. Some member in their family has done some really exalted deeds because of which they get their mercy. So, the first thing that we understand is that your personal greatness is due to your service to great devotees or great personalities. When we forget this fact, then we make mistakes in our life. It is explained that when an elephant is eating food, I mean, elephant eats like huge quantities, you know. And when elephant eats, some morsel of that food falls on the ground. The little remnants that fall from an elephant's mouth on the ground, that can feed millions of ants. Literally millions of ants can eat from, you know, what falls from the elephant's mouth, you know. So when great devotees of the Lord, great personalities, when they relish and they share that what they relish with the world, with what comes out from their mouth, millions of ants like all of us can survive. You know, that's the greatness of great personalities. Unfortunately, when we tend to think of guru or a spiritual teacher or great devotees as ordinary, then we make mistakes of misunderstanding that our nourishment has come from their greatness. So there are two ways one can connect with a teacher, with a guru. The first relationship of a disciple with a guru is a relationship of artho and artharthi. That means, so like Krishna speaks about these four qualities by which you approach him. The same four qualities can be used in approaching the spiritual master also, the guru also. The first two qualities, artho and artharthi, means, so for such people, what is guru? They consider guru as they cultivate the relationship on a physical level. That means for them, the guru is their guide to prosperity. Guru is their counselor who solves problems. Guru is a doctor who cures diseases. And guru is a psychiatrist who, you know, helps them deal with their stress. And guru is a marriage counselor, essentially. So, the person who treats guru from the point of view of artho and artharthi, that means they are like using a cannon bomb to kill a mosquito. I mean, the cannon bomb can destroy a city probably, you know. But if you use that cannon bomb to only kill a mosquito, that's like hardly using the cannon bomb in the right way. So such people, when they approach the teacher, approach the guru, they approach for material wealth or solutions to material problems. The second way of connecting to the guru is from the point of view of jnani and jigyasu. That means here the relationship of with the guru is inquirer and seeker. So such people, they worship guru not from a physical perspective, and there is no physical dependency on the guru. They remember guru as a person who illuminates their path. And such people, they have intense spiritual thirst. They are not after material wealth. So here when we find Banasur connecting with Lord Shiva, there is a very clear material motive behind why he connected with such a great personality. So essentially, there are, when we come to a teacher, when you come to a spiritual guru, the guru teaches us two things, or two ways to see lives. So he teaches us how to repair the repairabilities. That means anything in our life that can be repaired, guru teaches us how to repair it. And those things that cannot be repaired, the guru teaches us how to withstand it, how to tolerate it. So essentially, there are different types, different ways in which the spiritual master or the guru inspires his disciple, or, you know, illuminates his disciple's life. What we know as diksha is ultimately the guru's way of enthusing, inspiring a disciple. The first type of diksha is known as sparsha diksha. That means by touch of the spiritual master, you know, inspiration can happen. And we know so many devotees, you know, who have been hugged by some great devotee, you know, and just by hugging once, they take spiritual commitments, you know. Like one of our devotees, Premnidhi Prabhu, you know, his father, every time Radhana Swami Maharaj hugs him, he would increase one round of chanting, you know. And by just being hugged like that, 16 times, he started 16 rounds chanting, you know. Sparsha Diksha. Then there is another type of initiation, which is Smarana Diksha, which means by the thoughts of the spiritual master, there is mercy that flows. When you remember the spiritual master, when you remember the words of the guru. And then there is Nayana Diksha. That means by the vision of the spiritual master, there is inspiration. And then there is Kripa Diksha. By the mercy of the spiritual master, there is inspiration. So essentially, most people who take the association of great personalities for granted, they at some point of time forget the greatness of the great personalities and they consider themselves to be great. So Banasur, this is exactly what happened in his life. All that he got in his life was the mercy of Krishna and mercy of Lord Shiva in his life, but he conveniently forgot that and he started considering himself to be great. So one time when Lord Shiva was dancing, Banasur came and played drum, 1,000 hands. Can you imagine, you know? Two hands, if some people can really play the musical instrument in such a way that it can create such a, you know, ecstasy. But if 1,000 hands somebody is playing with expertise, you know, then it can create really a great inspiration. So Lord Shiva was very happy with him and gave him the benediction. And he asked him, you ask for anything you want. So Banasur became qualified to get Shiva's mercy by serving him. And as soon as he got Shiva's mercy, and Shiva asked him, tell me what you want. He engaged Shiva in his service. He told him, you become my guard in my, you know, palace. Can you imagine, you know? The benediction that Banasur sought was making Lord Shiva as Kshetrapal. Lord Shiva's role is to be Kshetrapal, but of Vishnu Dham. But Banasur made Shiva Kshetrapal of his own dham, his own palace. Which essentially means, in Banasur's mind, he was considering himself to be like Vishnu. He was considering himself to be like the Lord, and he was considering Shiva to be in doing that same role which Shiva does for Vishnu Kshetra. So, by choosing Shiva as his guardian of his city, he started considering himself to be like Vishnu. And then, Banasura became very intoxicated with his strength. And at some point of time, you know, he had 1,000 arms and he had nobody to fight with. He started going and beating mountains. He was like really creating havoc. And when you beat mountains, when you beat inanimate objects, there is no resistance. When there is no resistance, there is no fun. Exhibition of strength is enthusiasm, or rather it becomes fun only when the resistance, or when you fight against somebody who is as enthusiastic to show their strength. So Banasura was beating up mountains and all, there was no fun only. When you fight against somebody who doesn't resist you, then there's no fun. You know, sometimes fighting is a hobby, you know. And when you know that, when you try to instigate somebody, and that person really gets instigated, you have more fun in instigating him more, you know. There is a certain type of rasa that comes in, you know, when the reciprocation is really good. So Banasura didn't find any reciprocation on the mountains, on the trees that he was beating up. He went to Lord Shiva. And he said, "My dear Lord, I have been fighting with these mountains, I have been pounding these mountains like anything. I don't find anybody who is powerful enough to fight with me. I only find one person, you. Can you fight with me?" Can you imagine, you know, he's going and asking his own, you know, master to fight with him. Lord Shiva realized that this fellow had become very proud of his strength. The tendency of material pride is to think that you want to defeat the very person who has brought you to this state. So many times, the tendency in a conditioned soul is to grow beyond the master. Everywhere in the corporate world, if you study, you know, this is the scenario. One of the problems that people face in the corporate world is that there is a lack of knowledge transfer. The boss doesn't give all the knowledge to his employees. The reason is because the boss is scared that if I give everything, this fellow will take over my seat. What will happen to me, you know? So there is a natural fear in somebody who is superior not to give empowerment to the junior. And because the superior doesn't want to empower the junior wants to take over the seat of the superior. That's like a reflex. And here we find Shiva has given Banasura as much as he wants, but still Banasura has a tendency of becoming superior to his superior. And that's a material situation. And that's why Lord Shiva, he cursed Banasura in fact, that very soon somebody will come to fight you who will destroy your pride. Shiva chastised Banasura. Banasura was his disciple. So Shiva had the right to chastise him. But at the same time, Shiva personally did not destroy the pride of Banasura. There is an understanding behind this. So though a disciple may change his loyalty towards his guru, the guru continues to remain merciful to his disciple and he does not abandon his duty towards his disciple. Rather, the guru prays that material nature will take care of the anarthas of his disciple. So Lord Shiva, he prayed that by Krishna's grace, this fellow will be purified of his anarthas. So the guru does what is known as egodectomy. That means he operates on the false ego. So essentially, the role of a teacher is to help us identify the subtle false ego that is there in our heart and somehow or the other puncture that. One time there was a man who was hearing some sadhu, you know, giving a talk. And this man, he was a little weird type of person. So he heard one part of the talk of this sadhu. And the sadhu said that if one wants to see God, then the only thing that is between you and God is your nose. If you can cut off your nose, then you will be able to see God immediately. This fellow became very inspired. He said, wow, so easy to see God. He decided, I will see God today only. He went to his house and he cut off his nose, thinking that he will see God. He waited for a few minutes, nothing happened, he couldn't see only. He waited for a few hours, still nothing happened, he couldn't see only. Then he got so frustrated, he said, all these sadhus are nonsense people. They give very impractical and wrong solutions. I will take revenge on the world now. This fellow, what he started doing is, he didn't come out of his house for many days. So people in the neighborhood, they started getting worried. What is wrong with this fellow? And after a couple of days, one neighbor, you know, just opened the door and entered into his house. And he saw that this man, he was dancing like mad. He was dancing like crazy. And this neighbor, he said, what's wrong with you? And he acted as if he came out from a swoon. You know, he acted as if he came out from a big meditation. He said, I've seen God, I've seen God, I found the formula to see God. And practically all the, you know, neighbors and everybody around, they came to find out what formula this fellow has. This fellow said, I will tell you what the formula is, but provided you are ready to do what I do. So everybody said, wow, he has seen God and he's ready to teach us. So he said, the formula is that your nose is coming between you and God. Unless you remove your nose, you will not be able to see God. And then the entire village, so homely people started coming and everybody started cutting their nose, you know. And everybody tried to see God, nobody saw God. And he laughed at everyone, he said, now that you have suffered, you make other people suffer also. Get more people to me, you know. Like that, hundreds and thousands of people were becoming his followers and he started getting a big following, you know. And then the king of that area, he also got inspired that he also wanted to become his disciple. So one of his ministers, he was clever. So he said, let's see what this fellow really has to say. They observed him from behind, you know. Many people were going, getting initiation, they were getting their nose cut, and they were coming out, you know. And the minister heard what this man tells those people who are becoming his disciple, cutting off their nose. The fellow was telling them, because you followed me, you have to suffer now like me. And because I am suffering, you know, because all these dhongi sadhus are telling all wrong things, you also have to suffer. And the minister heard this and he told the king. And then the king realized that this fellow is a cheater and he drove him away from the kingdom. This man stopped hearing the sadhu after a certain sentence. He said, that sadhu is telling that for you to see God, the only thing that is in between you and God is your nose. And then the sadhu continued saying that the nose is not the nose that breathes in and breathes out. The nose is the false ego that comes and pokes in between everything that you try to do, you know, and try to do all your elevation. So many times in spiritual life, the greatest obstacle is the false ego that comes in between you and God. So Lord Shiva over here, he was trying to help Banasur purify that one thing that was coming between him and his elevation in spiritual life. And he allowed time to decide how he'll get purified. So in the meanwhile, in Banasur's life, his daughter, Usha, she had a dream of a lover who came to her in a dream. And she told this dream to her friend, Chitraleka. And her friend helped her paint, you know, different pictures of different you know, princes in that era. And finally, she, you know, saw Aniruddha, the grandson of Lord Krishna. And immediately she said, this is the one. And Chitraleka went and kidnapped Aniruddha. This is a story which is reverse to what Krishna does, you know. Krishna kidnaps Rukmini and his grandson is kidnapped, you know. So, Banasur, he comes to know of the love affair of his daughter. And he gets Aniruddha arrested. And then Krishna comes to know through Narad Muni. And Krishna comes and fights. So there's a fierce fight between Krishna and Lord Shiva. And Krishna makes Lord Shiva yawn for a long period of time, you know. Exhaustion in while you are engaged in some service, which is against the Lord, you know, is actually bona fide, you know. So in Gajendra Leela, we find this particular section where Gajendra is going and enjoying with all his, you know, followers and wives and children. In that section, there is one particular verse which says that as Gajendra was enjoying with his people, he became tired. Which essentially means that when somebody engages in material enjoyment, exhaustion is normal. So generally, when you enjoy, you're supposed to be happy. You're supposed to lose fatigue. But material enjoyment makes you more fatigued. And spiritual enjoyment makes you enthusiastic and happy. And because here, Lord Shiva was fighting against Krishna. He was fighting against, you know, somebody who is going to give him spiritual enjoyment. He was fighting against his own Lord. He went through phases of yawning, you know. So when we go through material exhaustion, that means somewhere something is wrong. You know, we are losing the taste for the spiritual consciousness. So Banasur, when Shiva was yawning, so Krishna continued fighting with Banasur. And Banasur was on the verge of being killed. And just when he was on the verge of being killed, his mother, Kotara, she came running out naked completely, you know. And as soon as Krishna saw her completely naked, he turned away. Indicating that pornography is not good to see, you know. So Krishna was so disgusted that his lady came out completely naked. He turned away. Krishna, he told this to Duryodhana also when Gandhari came out, you know. Gandhari wanted Duryodhana to come out completely naked. He said, you can't go in front of your mother naked like that, you know. Cover something. So here, there's a very interesting thought process between two mothers here. This Kotara, she came out naked to save her son. And Gandhari made Duryodhana naked to save her son. So here, both the mothers apparently are doing something that is not really a sign of strength. Both the mothers wanted to protect their sons. But how they protected their sons is wrong. So in Gandhari's life, we find that Vyasadev comes and tells Gandhari that tapasya or austerities gives you a lot of strength. So he tells that austerity, the power of austerity, anyone who does tapasya, that austerity manifests in three ways. It manifests in the form of words. If anybody is empowered to speak in a powerful way, that means that person has done enough tapasya in the past. Austerity manifests in the form of thoughts. If anybody has, you know, extremely fertile thoughts, that means that person has performed austerities in a great way. And third thing, austerities, the power of tapasya comes out in the form of his blessings. If anybody has done enough austerities in the past, tapasya in the past, that person can give blessings to others. So because Gandhari has done so much tapasya by, you know, tying her eyes up, blindfolding herself, her tapasya is concentrated in her eyes. And the power of those tapasya can come out in the form of blessings and can bless Duryodhan with power externally. If you study, the difference between Gandhari and Kunti is that Kunti also empowered her sons. But Kunti did not empower her sons with external strength. She empowered her sons with internal strength. They could tolerate any kind of pain. They could tolerate any kind of emotional trauma. They could tolerate any kind of disturbances that come in their life. Gandhari empowered her son not with internal strength, but with external strength. So externally, Duryodhana became extremely powerful. But internally, he remained weak all lifelong. Gandhari taught Duryodhana to actually prove to the world that he is great. But Kunti taught her sons to improve themselves so that the world sees them as great. So here we find when a mother doesn't understand how to really empower the son, the mother does mistakes like this, which are so disgusting, you know. Kotara, she came out naked to protect her son, Banasur. You know, if only she had helped him develop the right value system, she wouldn't have to become naked and become, you know, infamous in the history of the world. So essentially, then after, you know, Banasur escaped. So when his mother came out, Banasur ran away into his palace, you know, And then Lord Shiva came out of his yawning spell and he started fighting against Krishna. So Lord Shiva released the Shiva Jwara and Krishna released the Vishnu Jwara, Narayan Jwara. And Shiva Jwara started shivering in front of Vishnu Jwara. And Shiva Jwara took shelter of Lord Krishna and Krishna forgave him. And then again Banasur came out, you know, in the meanwhile. When he realized that Shiva is not going to do anything for him, he came out and started fighting. And Krishna started chopping off all his arms, one by one, you know. And, you know, the explanation that is given in the Bhagavatam is that Krishna was chopping off the hands of Banasur just like a person axes branches of a tree, you know. It's cutting off one by one. So the hands of Banasur represent the pride of Banasur. So essentially, in this world, there are people who are extremely proud of what they have. So there are three types of people in this world. And these three types of people, they have to behave in three different ways. And they need to upgrade. Actually, everything that you have in your life, whatever property, whatever skills, whatever assets you have in this life, all these assets end up in three destinations. Or they end up in three ways. That's their end, basically. The first way in which every skill, every property that you have ends up is, first is in offering. If what you have, you offer it to service of the others, service of the Lord, that is the first way in which your property or skills can be used. The second way in which your property or skills can be used is in enjoyment for yourself. And the third way in which property or skills can be used is in destruction. That means if you don't offer it to Krishna or the devotees, or you don't use it for your personal enjoyment, they will get destroyed with time. So Banasur, he did not offer what he had, all the skills that he had, all the hands that he had for the service of the Lord, but rather he wanted to use it for his own enjoyment, so he lost everything. So essentially, there are three types of lifestyles or three types of mindsets in this world. The first type of mindset is the demigod mindset. There are many people who live in this world like demigods. That means their purpose of life is pleasure seeking, enjoyment. They want to have fun. That's the first mindset that exists in the world. This is the most common mindset. So when somebody who has a devata mindset or pleasure seeking mindset, such a person should overcome that pleasure seeking mindset by exercising restraint, by following a life of discipline. The second type of lifestyle is people who have demonic mindset. They are very cruel in nature. So such people, they need to overcome this cruelty by becoming compassionate. The third type of mindset is the human mindset. The human mindset is very miserly, conjus, you know. So demigods are pleasure seeking, demigod mindset is pleasure seeking, demonic mindset is cruel, and human mindset is miserly. So human mindset, those who have human mindset, they have to overcome this human mindset by becoming charitable, or by rather learning to give others. Whenever you are having the demigod mindset, devata mindset, and you exercise restraint, that is what we know as Namaruchi. When we, instead of trying to enjoy ourselves, we try to derive pleasure in chanting the holy names of the Lord. Instead of physically trying to derive enjoyment, if the tendency to derive enjoyment is there, you need to convert it into Namaruchi, the desire for experiencing pleasure through the holy name. If the demonic mindset is there, if there is great cruelty, then one has to practice compassion, which is jivadaya. And if there is a human mindset, which is very miserly, then one has to practice giving, which is Vaishnava Seva, doing for others, serving others. So only when one has a combination of these three things, one can be happy in one's life. So here, Banasur, he had all those arms, he had all those skills and powers, but he was trying to use everything for his own self, so it got destroyed. So Lord Krishna was destroying those arms very systematically. And Lord Shiva, when he saw that his disciple was in trouble, can you imagine what a greatness Shiva is showing? he came in front of Krishna and he started offering prayers and he started begging Krishna to forgive his disciple Banasura. Which actually shows that a guru doesn't take offense if a disciple deviates. A guru doesn't take offense if a disciple tries to use him for his own purposes. But rather the guru somehow or the other prays to the Lord that his deviation gets rectified. And when the disciple is going through too much purification, the guru still comes and tells the Lord, "My dear Lord, don't trouble him so much. Forgive him." That's the nature of a guru's greatness. So the guru never abandons his disciple, even though the disciple might stray away. So essentially, of course, Lord Krishna, eventually we see that Krishna forgives him. But the understanding from this whole episode is that spiritual master, his role in a disciple's life is to help the disciple grow. And whenever the disciple understands this mood of the spiritual master, the disciple never abandons such a spiritual master. So essentially, in spiritual life, from a disciple's point of view, there are four things that are needed for every disciple to have in his personal spiritual life to be able to grow. These things, you don't need to depend on others for it. You need to cultivate it. So the first thing a disciple needs to cultivate is viveka, or the spirit of discrimination. The second thing a disciple needs to cultivate is vairagya, or the spirit of detachment. The third thing the disciple needs to cultivate is six forms of wealth. These six forms of wealth are very important for a disciple to have. The first wealth that a disciple needs to have is sama, which means letting go of desires. The second type of wealth that a disciple needs to have is dhamma, which means restraining one's senses. The third type of wealth is uparati, which means being aware of the sense objects and staying away from them. And the fourth type is titiksha, which means patience and acceptance of whatever situation that comes into one's life as God's grace. So essentially, when you don't know how to exhibit patience or how to see God's grace that comes into your life, you tend to think that patience means no action. So you should have patience, but at the same time you should continue acting. And the fourth thing that a disciple needs to have is Shraddha, or faith. So essentially, there are two types of expression of faith. One is an intellectual expression and one is a heartfelt expression. In the beginning, the faith has to be from the mind, where the disciple thinks, "I trust, I believe what the guru says." And then eventually, the faith becomes experiences. Most disciples, they want faith that is tangible from the beginning only, you know. You can't get tangible faith right from the beginning. First, you have to have faith that the guru, what the guru is saying is right. And then eventually you will have your own experiences, then you can have faith, you can believe, you know. But when you start doubting what the guru says right from the day one, from the beginning only, then you will not have those experiences. Like one man, he reached an island, and in that island, so this man, he met a guru, and this guru, he told him, "I'll give you a mantra." So he said, taking this mantra, you'll be able to cross any river. So he was like stranded in one place. The guru said, "Keep this mantra in your pocket. And as long as you keep the mantra in your pocket, you'll be able to walk on the water." This fellow, he was happy. So he put the mantra in his pocket. The guru told him, "Don't see the mantra." So he kept the mantra in his pocket and he kept walking, you know. And he actually literally walked on water. And there was a boat going by. And the people saw this fellow, "Are, this fellow is walking on water." So they asked him, you know, how did you manage to walk on water? And this fellow said that, you know, my guru gave me mantra and that mantra is helping me walk on water. So these people asked him, "Can you give us this mantra? We will give you a lot of money." This fellow took out the mantra and he read it. And in that mantra it was written, only one word is written, Krishna. This man started thinking, How is it possible with only this one word, I have the power to walk on water? As soon as he doubted, he drowned and he died. So essentially, when you start doubting the process, faith in the spiritual master's words or the faith in the spiritual master's process itself is the path by which we can cross. But if you start doubting the process and start analyzing the process with our intelligence, then the process itself starts failing. Because the process is not supposed to be doubted, it is supposed to be followed. And finally, the disciple has to have samadhan. Samadhan means concentration on the truth. And the fourth thing that a disciple should have is shravanam, which is the ability to listen to the teachings of the spiritual master with alertness. Only shravanam is not enough. There has to be alertness in hearing also. And that kind of alertness brings a disciple to understand how to practice spiritual life. So essentially, the four things are viveka, or then vairagya, or detachment, the six forms of wealth, and fourth is shravanam, or the ability to listen. When a disciple has this kind of faith in the spiritual master, not some kind of faith that is just based on gaining the mercy of the spiritual master in terms of wealth or in terms of facilities or in terms of, you know, powers. But if you have faith in the spiritual master's words, that whatever the spiritual master gives me, whatever the guru gives me, is good for my spiritual life. That kind of faith will actually help us grow. And when we start doubting and when we start wanting to become greater than our own guru, then we start becoming proud and we start falling down. I'll end with one very interesting story of what is the kind of faith that one has to have in the spiritual master. One time there was a guru who was talking to his disciple, became late in the night. So the guru told his disciple, you go to sleep, I want to meditate for some more time. So the disciple went to sleep. And as the disciple went to sleep, the guru saw there was a snake coming, going towards the disciple. The guru was a very powerful mystic. He started speaking to the snake. And he asked the snake, what do you want? Why are you going to my disciple? The snake said, I'm going to bite your disciple. The guru said, what exactly do you want from the disciple? He said, I want the blood of your disciple. The guru said, wait. So he went, took a knife, and he took a bowl. And he went and sat on the disciple's chest. And he started asking the snake, you want blood from which part of my disciple? That time disciple woke up, you know. And he saw his guru sitting on his chest with a knife in his hand. And the disciple, for 1 second, he got bewildered. And then he saw, that is my guru. He closed his eyes and went to sleep. The guru asked the snake, from where you want the blood? The snake said, from the throat. So the guru took a knife, slightly slit the throat, caught a few drops of blood and gave it to the snake. And the guru went to sleep. The next day morning, the disciple got up, the guru got up. The disciple didn't ask the guru anything. He didn't ask him anything. The guru went to the disciple and asked him, yesterday you experienced something, don't you want any explanations for it? And the disciple told the guru that because I have complete faith in you, I know what you do for me is for my good. Therefore, after I have surrendered to you, there is no need for me to analyze what your actions are, whether it is for my good or for my bad. I know that my actions are for my good only. And therefore, I went to sleep conveniently. And here, we find an exact opposite situation in the life of Banasura. Having a guru who had that kind of ability to give him greatness, but doubting that guru and rather wanting to become better than that guru, all troubles began in Banasura's life. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. If there is anything I have spoken which is beyond my realization, please forgive me. If there is anything that I have spoken that has helped you, please bless me. Hare Krishna.